Hello everybody and welcome to the AntPod, where today we'll be talking about dealing with big colonies. This is a topic requested by Donnie, and if you have a topic to discuss, be sure to send it to the AntPod Instagram, and your topic may be the next episode. But what do you do when you have two big colonies? Do you kill them? Do you release them? Well, let's find out. Today we have Lynn and Jake and me, Alex. And to start off, let's just share our experience with keeping big colonies. And Jake, what sort of colonies have you been keeping which have grown to the bigger size?
Well, I've had quite a few over the years, to be fair. A lot of rubra colonies, which I love those. So I've had like so many tanks where I don't want to drill the tanks because, well, before I saw Ants Ramblin's video on drilling glass, I would have never ever kind of drilled glass. So I'd have these big colonies like all tanked up, all nice. But yeah, some of them did get a bit big. But I've also had like the Kerebera got quite big in the end. Currently I've got the Tetramorium Bicarinatum and the Cardioclondia Obscuria. They're getting a bit big now as well. And I've also had Fidole Palladula. And I think that's about it. Well, most of them.
I mean, that's not a bad amount of big colonies. What about you, Lynn? How many and what sort of species have you kept that you would consider big?
I used to have a big Camponotus cinctellus. Then I had this massive last year's nitre colony. I have a very big Camponotus maculatus, and then I have another very big Camponotus maculatus. I used to have a very big Camponotus maculatus subnudus. Downstairs I have a big Irrodimyrmex purpurus, I think it's named. Then I have a big Nicobarensis, a big Mesobarbarus. Let's see, the Fidoli is not that big, but when you count the workers in comparison to maculatus, it might be pretty big. The Barbaricus is medium-sized. What else do we have? I probably forget something. I don't like forgetting my colonies, but I might forget one.
I mean, already there we have... You're still keeping a lot of them big, as it sounds like. I have my... Remaining at the moment, I only have my Nova Mesa Cockerelli, which I would consider big. I've had my Mesa Barbarus as well, which I bought as a big colony and just kind of maintained them in that size. And I've also had my Ada Mexicana, which I grew from tiny to humongous. And... Well, the Ada definitely teach me a lot about having big colonies, and the Mesobarbarus in a similar way also teach me a lot, with both of them having multiple big escapes and with both of them having a lot of maintenance required around them. And I think the question from Donnie is what you do with big colonies is kind of how you deal with them. Can you feed them? How do you house them? And what if you don't want them to be deep big? What do you then do? But Jake, what are some of the issues that you've been having with keeping big colonies?
Well, I guess it's what you define as big as well, because like sometimes you've got a colony that isn't the massivest colony, but you've got it stuck like in the wrong setup, and you like they're kind of stuck in it. So you could have a colony with maybe like a few thousand workers, but it could be a big colony because they're like proper stuck in their setup, and you can't expand it and things like that. And that's always, I've had a few issues in the past with that. It's something I always look out for. I remember when I was watching you grow your atters as well, like having gone through a few colonies that got like way too big, it was like, oh, Oliver's gonna like learn some stuff soon, basically.
I certainly did. I think that what you don't realize is, as every new ankeeper comes in with this hobby wanting to have a colony grow from very small to very big. I ended up buying my first big colony because I had a few quite nicely going colonies that died in my early ankeeping years. And when I saw this Mesobarbarus colony available, I just wanted to get them. I wanted to have a big colony. I couldn't say I'd grown them, but still very cool to have them. But... As cool as it is, you suddenly realize the amount of time big colony takes, because nowadays, I mean, like you said, Jake, it's a little bit hard to define a big colony because my Tetrarium bicarinatum, I wouldn't consider them big at all. I wouldn't say they're small either, but still, that's the colony at the moment that's taking most time regarding my maintenance, just because, like you say, they're a little bit stuck in the wrong setup. They should have had a bigger outwell and potentially also another nest. Yeah, what about you, Lynn? What are your experience with having colonies growing big?
Well, most of my colonies that are big are pretty chill, except that I usually have trouble with keeping their outworld clean because they tend to overrun sometimes. Like my Nicobarensis, they love to chill in their outworld instead of the nest. So it's like there's like 2,000 ants in the outworld just chilling there, just sitting, because they're not really moving either. It's just sitting there. And then some of the other species, like the Subnudus and the Aerodimyrmex and the Lassius Niger, if you didn't feed them enough, they would just find a way to escape. They would destroy the barrier, they would get out, they would, in the case of Lassius Niger, they would raid the other colonies. Real annoying.
Oh.
So some are really chill. Most of them are really chill. I keep the chill ones. And some are like really hard to maintain and upkeep, and they just wreak havoc whenever they can.
So what do you mean when you say chill?
Well, pretty much like exactly that. They just sit there. They just if I throw in protein, they go crazy, of course. But most of the day, they're just waiting patiently until I check something in.
I mean, okay. Well, what sort of species would you then? Well, what sort of species have you learned to be on the more chill vibe?
Both of my maculatus are pretty chill, and then my Cinctellus used to be very chill. The Aerodimyrmex is only chill if I don't touch the setup, but they are with many, like really many in the outworld, and they are hard to clean. But other than that, they're pretty chill. The Superbaris is rather chill. They don't really try to escape. My Nicobarensis and my Mesobarbaris, they don't have a lid on their setup at all.
Oh.
Because they don't even try to break the barrier. They just sit there all day.
Damn, that's impressive. I mean, I did the same with my Mesobarbaris. They never escaped. They were also very bad climbers. I think it's a little bit to do with that as well. And just talking with you having multiple big setups, I think it's also a factor coming in. Once your colony starts growing large, they need large equipment. And there's a ton of small and accessories. There's a ton of small outworlds. There's a medium range of medium outworlds. There's not that many large outworlds, but the bigger the setup grows, the slimmer the options get, and you are a lot more dependent on a single store providing a product that works. And I mean, I had my Mesobarbaris in the old version of the high-tech ants outworld, and although the issue was fixed at that point, there wasn't really any outworlds out there. Luckily, I got made this massive outworld and became a product that was available to sell. But when the fixing broke and they escaped, you just sit there like, okay, there's literally nothing else on the market than this product, and you're a little bit stuck. I mean, high-tech ants did go on and resolve the problems, but another issues when the colonies grow big. What did you want to add, Jake?
I've always kind of cheated, and like once they get to a certain point, they always seem to end up in like a fish tank. So kind of beyond a certain point, when you're getting into like really big colonies, it's fish tanks, I guess, are the way forward.
But would you say you get stuck then? Because then that's the issue where it's a lot harder to upgrade. Mm.
Not since I've learned how to like that, or that it's actually quite easy to drill glass. Before, I would have been like, oh no, they're stuck. But it's not too hard to actually drill the glass, thanks to Ant's Ramblings video. Like, check that one out. And now I can expand them out, luckily, which has kind of made them really useful. Like, a lot more useful than a standard fish tank with no holes.
Big shout out to Ant Ramblings. What's the main things you do when you're drilling in the glass then?
I think you just gotta have a little bit of water like going over it, and it just kind of either lubricates it or keeps it cool, or a bit of both, and it just gently go through it and you're sorted. Just gotta be gentle and slow.
I mean, I guess there's also glass drills you get, right? It's a special bit.
Oh yeah, I should really mention that. It's like special that whole thrill bits, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think as well, they might come a little bit different size to the glass drill bits. So they go smaller. So if you've got like 13 mil tubing, get a 12 mil drill bit sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's always the good old classic hot water trick. Put the tubing in some hot water and it becomes soft. And that's actually something I feel like you don't really hear about that anymore. That was like the golden trick back in the days, and nowadays, I don't know if just because I don't see enough beginner videos, but I feel like that's not something you hear about too much anymore. But
I haven't heard it mentioned for ages.
Yeah. By the way, guys, if you have a chip that's just too big, put it down in some boiling water for a minute and it becomes very soft and also very hot, so also be gentle. But that is the golden trick to creating an escape-proof setup because, well, the tubes kind of expand into place once you put it in. Jake, what would you say your experience have with big, keeping big colonies, like maintaining them? What would you say the issues you've found to be?
Well, with the Tetramorium, they're just grubby. But with other species, I guess, if you're lucky, they'll make a trash pile.
What do you mean when you say grubby?
Oh, terrible. Like, they don't make a bin. They're just like, the world is my bin. So they just dump it everywhere. Whereas messes and stuff, I've always found they're a little bit better. Although they're quite messy, to be fair. They like to move their junk pile half the time. And yeah. But they do make a junk pile or like a garbage patch, which it does make them a lot easier. But I just pull out my pooter nowadays and hoover them up with the USB hoover.
Yeah, exactly. That is the golden trick. USB hoover, trash pile, put in a separate container, sort out the ants. That is just any ant keeper should have a hoover just for that. I mean, any ant keepers with big colonies. But would you say your colonies have been under control, or have you ever had them kind of grow too fast and lose control over them?
Oh, I've had all sorts. But, the Paladula, they definitely went out of control and they faced the consequences as well. That sounds so bad. I am a bit of a monster, but I'll get to that in a sec. But yeah, they grew like so fast. It was kind of like, oh, I'll get some Fidole in summer of, I don't know, 2021 or 22. And thought, yeah, I'll get some Fidoles. And by winter, they were kind of chucking out elates and everything. And I just like power feeded them for a bit, and in about March, like, they were getting some serious numbers, and I was like, I'm gonna stop feeding you now. Like, basically all you're gonna get is like water and maybe the odd bit of sugar. And I put them on like the strictest diet I could, and their numbers just kept going up and up and up and up. And I managed to kind of keep them contained, and they were stuck in a fish tank basically as well. So I couldn't get them out into another setup. And it also had cement in the bottom of the fish tank. Like, if it was dirt inside of the fish tank, I would have been okay. But no, I decided I'm going to pour some concrete onto the bottom of it. And they got round and underneath the concrete. So they were living under there. So I had like, there's nothing I could do to actually kind of relocate the colony. So, where they just kept growing and growing, and after about four mass escapes, they kind of started where they just overwhelmed any barrier, like in a few days. Like most ants, you can leave the barrier there for like months and nothing happens, whereas they were wearing it down like proper fast, and they'd be out, and eventually they properly blew out, and like everywhere in the house was full of ants. And I decided like, I can't do this anymore, sort of thing. And I got the kettle and just like poured it in a bit, and kind of was like, it had to do. But it was like after many escapes, and I kind of had enough of hoovering them up. Like, I'd hoovered them up a fair bit, and I'd given trying to contain them and a good bash, but it was kind of, I'm losing now. And then they'd start to get into other ants too, and it was like, it's the only thing I can do. And I could have culled them, but then I didn't really know where the queen was, and it was all a bit tricky.
Yeah. I mean, the thing once, it seems once the colonies escape for the first time, they get a taste for that escaping.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, take the freedom.
I mean, just look at Ann's Hood. Ann's Hood did brilliantly with his fire ants by showcasing every step of the way, pretty much. He showed that there was his Solenopsis geminata. He showed from the first day he got them and how they grew, and they were just charming. And he didn't get, why is there all of this negativity around them? They're great. And they were just so huge when they had their first escape, first real escape. And over like a month or 2 months, I can't remember how long it was, Ann's Hood also did, we had him featured on the Ann Put Back an episode around 14, 15-ish, where he explained, told the full story, so go ahead and listen to that if you want. But yeah, they kept escaping, and he kept hoovering them up, and he just, hoovering them up and returning them again. But in the end, he was just a broken man. That colony broke him, it seemed, because they just kept escaping. He siliconed it, he used hot glue, everything just didn't work.
I was just going to say, it does get to the point after they've escaped like a certain amount of times, and it's just like, you are just defeated. And then it's kind of, you've only got, like, well, Hood was lucky because he could send his off, which is quite good. But if you got him in the wrong setup, you've like messed up bad then. And you got to feel bad.
If I were to have a colony grow too large in my viv, in my vivarium, the dirt setup, that wouldn't, I mean, there's only one way to get that colony smaller. That's not by sending it on to someone else, because I can't move that. Yeah.
Although luckily, you've kind of got an auto-culling, like, setup, I guess. Because if the ants get high enough, surely some of them might, like, drown in the water or something. That's what I'm counting on in some of my setups. Like, if you get too big, like, you'll push each other into the water sort of thing, and the population will stabilize.
Yeah. Except for if there's not a running water, the water becomes stagnant and the ants can just walk on top of it. That's something I'll get into. I'll get into that in a minute. But Lynn, first of all, what have you ever had colonies that kind of grew out of control?
No, I think I've pretty much covered it.
Oh, wow.
So the last year's Niger did that, of course. And it was escape after escape and after escape. And like you said, once they have a taste of freedom, they won't stop until they escape again. And at that point, I was sick of it. So I actually got rid of them. And the Subnudus had it at the end when I was keeping them. I had to move them a few times, and they also they became really chewy. So they started to chew on absolutely everything, and I bought this brand new big Wakushi Generation 3, the large one, the XL one, whatever. And nothing remains of that nest. Like, it's only the 3D printed shell. Everything inside is gone to bits. Same thing happened with one of the EA White Tongue nests. Completely shredded. Nothing remains. Everything needed to go. And they, things like that. It happens sometimes with big colonies. They just start murdering everything.
Why would you say that happens?
Well, some people say it's space, so they want more space. But my colonies, it didn't need more space. It was like the perfect size. And it was like, they were too small for an expansion. So I'm not sure why they were so chewy. They just like to chew, I guess. It might also have to do with the genus, of course, the species in the wilds, that they might live in something that they needed to chew, like wood, soft wood.
Ah, so it wasn't because you were like cutting down on the food or anything?
No, not with this particular colony.
No, because my leaf cutters, of course, the leaf cutters are kind of the colony that broke me regarding escapes, because, oh man, did they escape many times. Only like four really bad ones. But at one point, because I had such a DIY setup between the Wakushi pots, I was using products from all kind of stores and taping everything together, putting cotton everywhere. Every morning, pretty much, they would be starting escaping. Only like 5 to 10 workers, but every day almost. And I ended up just ripping the entire setup all away and just cutting it down to the bare minimal. And I survived with that for almost a few months until the colony just needed more space. And the thing is, I of course went for the very DIY solution and building a massive table, which was very cool. But it also means that the ants have a lot of area to attack, and I could clearly see that they were so happy when I fed them, and so happy when I fed them every other day. But as soon as I skipped that second day of feeding, they were just on the barriers. They were just fighting it. And, well, eventually they had their big escapes, and my worst escape was definitely when my roommate at the time, who was sleeping in the room next to the ant room, came in and woke me up at like 3 a.m. saying the ants had escaped and they were in his room. And I just thought, nah, that's a joke. But yeah, Tuesday morning at 3 a.m., the leaf cutters were on a roll. And yeah, that's eventually what led me to letting go of my colonies, or at least, yeah, I wanted to downsize them, but also I felt like they were at such a stage where potentially a zoo would take care of them, and, well, a zoo did take care of them. So let's go move a little bit on with the question, because what can you do? I guess what can you do to prevent them from escaping? If we start with you, Jake.
I guess just more and more barrier. That's what I do. Just like if they escape, like a thicker bit of liquid PTFE normally. And then if they still escape a bit more, the only issue then is you end up kind of covering over kind of part of your view with just cloudy white stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's ruined my Tsitsimoran by Carinatum, because although they're not a big colony, they're just attacking. When they're not fed, they're just bored. And they're just attacking the lids all the time. And it makes me... I just do maintenance on them. I barely enjoy them anymore because they're just such a pain to do maintenance on. But yeah, Lynn, what do you do when you lose control? Even though you said you hadn't really lost control of the colonies, but... Well, what would you do if you were to lose control and they were just constantly playing around with you?
Well, I do have one of my maculatus, of course. They made alates, and alates were actually harming the colony to a point that more alates were being born and fed than actual workers. So what I did at that point was I opened up the whole nest and removed all the alates, which in the end also ended up killing a lot of the workers at the same time. So the colony actually became much smaller and easier to maintain, and no more alates got born after that either. So if one of my colonies were to lose control, let's say, like if it's the Erodi Myrmex, I would just like probably do population control in the form of taking a part of the colony and rudely said, put them to sleep. I might consider that with a species like Erodi Myrmex. Most colonies, they might be easier to control with protein control, but some species do not want to be controlled in such a way. They won't allow it.
Yeah, they fight back.
Yeah, so they will be on the barrier, they will put you to the test, they will chew the tubing, chew all the ports of your nest, stuff like that. And at that point, the colony is no more fun to keep. So while it sounds really bad when you say it, like killing a part of the colony, but in the end, it's the stress of trying to contain a colony that doesn't want to be contained because it grows too big. Is it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds so rough, but I agree. I mean, my leaf cutters, when they escaped at those days when it wasn't fun, of course, sometimes I went with my little keyboard hoover and picked them up, but when they had the massive escapes, I turned off and my day was ruined. I was going to spend the next many hours sucking up ants with an actual hoover and just taking a part of the colony and just removing it. And the colonies after that, because you took that too high population away, the colonies always became a lot more joyful because you took that... They had been fighting the barriers and fighting the barriers and fighting the barriers for months at the time, or weeks at the time. Suddenly they would just escape, but once they had that population removed after the escapes, they would become a lot more manageable and a lot more fun again. But the thing is, just like you say, Lynn, some colonies are just not meant to be controlled. And a thing is also I think a lot of ant keepers will be surprised about, especially from talking with people who've neglected their ants for a long time and just fed them the bare minimum and forgot to feed them and all of this. Ants need barely nothing to survive. Like you said, Jake, before, when you almost stop completely feeding your Fidoli, they were still growing, because ants are, they're not meant to be groomed and taken care of like we do here in the ant-keeping community. That's, I think, many ants are actually struggling because we look at them too much, we feed, not necessarily feed them too much, but we do too much work around them, and I think that can stress sensitive species. But generally, the ants, if you just put them away, they'll survive for a long, long time, as long as they have a water supply. And yeah, that's why I think once you start to population control, sometimes it may already be too late, because they can survive a long time on our population control, because as long as they have water, the current workers won't die. And I think it'll take a lot of them, a lot of decision making from the colony before starting to sacrifice some brood to feed other broods and all of this.
But some species too, they're made for like, oh, it's a drought, it's not, there's not going to be any water for like the next 3 months as well, so they're just made to like withstand it, if you get what I mean. They just survive, like the Lassius niger, they're so hard to kill unless you dry them out. But
Irrawaddy Myrmex is a desert, or well, desert Australian has winters and snow as well, but like some ants are bred. Like if there's no food or no water for long times, they can survive that. They're extreme. So we can be like, oh yeah, we're just gonna limit protein. They're gonna sacrifice their own workers to keep their brood growing and alive. It doesn't matter to them. They will just choose their older workers and feed those to their brood. Or the Irrawaddy Myrmex, in case they have their larvae to be these really large, weird larvae that they can use as food and water storage.
Damn. Oh, that's fascinating. But all, it makes sense again, because there's their ants are meant to survive where well, other animals can't survive. And I remember when I'm like doing feeding control on my colonies, luckily I don't do it on any of my colonies at the moment, but I felt so horrible doing that feeding control. I'm like, oh god, I'm so sorry, this is all you're gonna get now. And I'm sure they wouldn't even notice it, because they were just like, ah, well, that's what we should get either way. I mean, we still get a full roach. I mean, we only needed a half, but Holofer just gave us a full instead of three fools. So I think we need to go on to the next part of the question. I mean, we're already a little bit in it. We have a little bit said how to control them. But yeah, what do they do? What do you do when they just grow too big? Is there something to do other than just taking a part of the colony, just relocating it?
Oh, I've got a whole list of this bit. So there are, wait, 2, 4, 6. I think there's, well, 7 or 8 options, I guess. You can sell them to someone else. Yep. You can destroy them, i.e., put them in the freezer or boil them. You can like part release them as well, so kind of extract the queen. So they're not going to be in, like, this is what I've done with some kind of not native species, but I've removed the queen and a nice sized colony, and then allowed the, they are non-native, but none of them are reproductive, so into the wild, I guess, into the back garden. And yeah, I wouldn't recommend that one too much unless you 100% know you don't have a queen in that setup, or you can full release them if they're native. Which is, that's the massive bonus of natives. You can go outside and just tip them out. Then you can split them down as well if you're lucky and they've got multiple queens. Like split off a queen and a load of workers and leave like a queen and a load of workers in the other nest. And oh, there's so many, so many options. You can also gift them, which I guess is like sell them, but for free. Then you got like, yeah, you can experiment as well, which, yeah. I think I've done a few, but it's when you've got a colony that's kind of big enough, I guess, or got excess work, you can experiment on them in nice, humane ways. Yeah, most of the time, yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, this is... Products can be tested to failure when you have colonies that are too big. So when you have colonies, that's where you can really test them. But I think you're very right with some of the points. A good example, like you also said, you could very easily just sell off a big colony, sell off or gift it to a friend. Like I gave my leaf cutters to the zoo, so that was I just kind of wanted to someone to take care of them. I knew were able to take care of them, and I knew that had the budget to take care of them, and I felt like a zoo that already had leaf cutters were the right decision. My Mesa Barbaras, I mean, the colonies was at this stage 6 or 7 years old from when the queen was initially captured, and I knew that her value of her life was it's minimal. I don't know, she may be able to live for many more years, but I also didn't want to sell a colony very big to say, oh, this is a huge colony, buy them now, because I knew that they had a track record. So I pretty much just gained a little bit of revenue from the setups they were living in, because I just gave the entire setup away. Of course, it's hard to get the ants out of the setup to move them. And I mean, again, it may depend very much from budget to budget. But again, I feel like once colonies are very big, it's mostly the product you're paying for.
Well, with me, two of my colonies, I sold them to be milk cows, I guess, which I feel kind of bad about that in the long run.
Milk cows? What do you mean with that?
Well, this particular shop buys big colonies, and you're in the end you're really happy because, oh, this guy gives a lot of money for you, my big colony, and he's gonna take good care of them because he's a shop. He takes the brood of the colonies to sell the brood to other keepers that have colonies, but this particular shop does not. Well, I can't really speak for that part. I'm not sure if he takes good care of them or not good care of them. He just takes brood and sells the brood, which can be harmful for the colony if not done properly.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a thing. And then my other colony I sold to another shop, and they are a display colony, which is also for sale at the same time. So if anybody would want them, they could buy them. Which I don't see happening anytime soon, but you can try. And I don't really condone releasing large colonies back into the wild, because if a colony has not grown there, it can be kind of harmful to the environment that you put them in.
Yeah, I think it's half and half. It's a big debate regarding how to release ants in the wild, because like you say. Yeah, because like you say, you can hurt the environment a lot because the environment is normally, unless you have a new construction site where all of the dirt have just been ripped off and there haven't been any nuptial flights and all the colonies have already been killed by all of this. Most of the time, there's an established ecosystem, and when you just drop a colony, a small colony will most likely just be taken out by the dominant colony, because I think I can say this for sure, all areas in Europe except mountains have a dominant colony pretty much everywhere you go. You may not know what colony is the dominant one, but I think if you release your colony there, you'll see which one is dominant if you observe them very closely over a few days, because I think, unless, like I said, it's a new construction site, there will always be an ecosystem, and either you will disturb them by sending a massive colony that can hurt the ecosystem, or at least change it. I mean, if it's a native colony, it's a native colony, but you may still disturb it either way. I mean, I'm not saying I'm any good, because I released my first ever ant colony into the wild, and I did it in February, so yeah, it was cold at that stage, so. And the worst thing is, as soon as I released them, I regretted it. I saw how massive they were living in a naturalistic setup. My first Avalacious Nitro colony. And when I released them, I saw how much brood were hidden under all the dirt. And I just felt so... I was so sad, because I pretty much... I haven't looked at these ants for ages, and I don't feed them. And I'm exiting the hobby. I'm throwing all my ant stuff in the trash. I'm not gonna be in this hobby anymore. And then I released them, and I'm like, damn. They were doing well, and then a few months later I really regretted it, because I joined the hobby again. And that's why, never stop ant keeping. You can pause your ant keeping for many months without actually killing the colonies, because I killed that colony, and if I just paused it, I would probably have kept it, because I would have started a few months ago or a few months later. Jake, what do you think about this releasing? Of course, all of this releasing colonies, like Jake said earlier, it has to be native, or you have to make sure they can't reproduce. But yeah, Jake, what do you think about releasing colonies?
You two definitely are right about it kind of being a bit naughty in nature. It's going to cause some problems if it's kind of they're too big and stuff like that. But I guess it's all kind of depends how well you kind of give back. That's how I see it personally. Like, if I can give the ants like nice habitats to live in the wild and make sure there's loads of them about, I don't feel too bad if I release any more. But then I try not to think about the fact that they probably aren't going to survive. I just kind of wish. But it's normally Latias niger, and then I'll release a colony maybe. And like the next year, I'll see a colony roughly in the same place. And in my head, that's the same colony that, so they've survived and everything's all good. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, I can't blame you for thinking like that. It's this, it's the age old question of, do you release a tiger into the wild after it's been in a zoo? Because yeah, it can finally be free, except it's not used to that environment, and they not and that environment is not used to it. So
I always put them near the house as well, so if they do think, oh, you know what, this like nature, that's not for us, I kind of hope that they'd move into
they
the
just
house
come,
or something
come and, yeah. come and live with you
yeah, and kind of move back in.
Oh, that's brilliant.
If they cold or anything. Yeah,
I remember I released, I think it was my Lycnoperta queen, released her into my backyard, and I knew for a fact that there was a little bit of Latias out there. But I mean, I'm living on the what is the first floor of a parking basement. There, I have a parking basement beneath me, which is like the dirt level beneath me is like 4 or 5 meters under me at the stage, and I thought there was just scavenging workers coming all the way up from there, but I quickly realized like a few days later, like, damn, there had been a lot of action around that Lycnoperta site where I had put it down. Even though it was quiet when I put it down, I just saw like 20-30 workers just walking around, like clearly something had disturbed them. And I'd never seen that many workers ever in that area of the 3 years I've lived here. That just shows a little bit that it may seem quiet where you put down the queen. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying if you are going to release them, well, why not see if you can release them to a seller or a guy who wants to take care of them instead. That's at least, I mean, I've been, like I said, with the Lycnoperta, I've been lazy. But at the end of the day, if I'd asked if anyone wanted them, I'm sure someone would have probably been able to take them off my hand. Lynn, what do you think? I mean, we've heard a little bit of your opinion, but yeah, what do you think of the whole releasing ants?
Well, it can go even deeper than that, because you think this Latias niger that I bought online is native, but it can actually come from like Poland or whatever, and it might not be genetically related to your ants in your native area at all, which can be even more, in a way, harmful to the environment that you're in.
Yeah.
Because just because a species is native doesn't mean that they should be around your place. Like, for example, Camponotus lycnoperta is somewhat native in my area. If I still lived in the north of Holland where I used to live, there's no colonies of them there. So I can say like, yeah, but they're native in my country, so I released them here. But they're not supposed to be there. If they're not there, then they might not survive there because it's not optimal, or because they just haven't flown that far or anything. So thinking that a colony is native and then releasing it because it's native is also not a very good idea.
And I think local would definitely be better. A word, I guess. It's just reminded me of...
If your colony has been captured locally as well. Because it hasn't. Yeah. If it has not, then it might also have tremendous effects on the wild populations.
Well, it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there was a documentary on, I think it was Formica rufibarbis, or might have been Rufoglaucus or something, but they were up in the mountains, and there's like a super colony somewhere of them. And like right next to them, they were like single colonies, because even like a few meters away, they are genetically different ants enough to kind of behave totally different and everything. And it's quite a good point. The location of where the ants came from, because I think it does make a big kind of, it's quite a big factor.
I mean, you're not wrong. I've also heard the age joke. I mean, back when I got my Harpignathus venatus from two different stores and they were two different sizes and I tried to merge them and they went all war. There was also the suggestion that it's, although it's the same species, because they were maybe from two potentially different countries, they were genetically not exactly the same species, and that caused them all to fight out. I've just found the initial question here from Donnie. And the first, or the initial comment read, how about a show talking about how you rehome a colony you're no longer caring for? Is selling the colony, or if the colony is growing too big, or you no longer can give it proper care? I feel like there's one part of that question we haven't really talked about. Well, we've sort of talked about it, but can you have a colony grow so big that you can no longer care for them? What would you say that would contain, Lynn?
Well, probably if you cannot pay for the upkeep anymore, or something like that. If something happens or anything and they become so big that you cannot maintain them, I guess?
Yeah.
Sounds like a bit like that.
Yeah, very, very, very well thought out, or very well said. And that also leads into the spiral of which we started with, because you no longer can keep them up to date, they need more space, they try to escape, you try to keep them under control, it can resolve in even more even more issues. And to be honest, let's just start with Jake. Jake, what do you enjoy the most? Small, medium, or big colonies?
A big, I think. Big and controlled, though. I don't like big and uncontrolled, but I do like big and controlled. And I'm a big fan of diets. It's like for the ants.
I did not expect you to say that. Okay, Lynn, what is your favorite? Small, medium, or big?
I like small colonies because I love to watch them grow and process and take their first steps. So the first worker, the first 10 workers, the first 100 workers. I love those small progressions and their new nests and moving them in and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of feeling the same as you, Lynn, because after growing quite a few colonies to some quite big sizes, I realized that the bigger they grow, the more time-consuming they also become. And there's at one stage, you just hit this break. I mean, I've never really tried to completely... I haven't tried to deliberately keep the colonies at a certain size. Maybe I should just try that. But then again, I feel like right now, I guess I'm doing that with my Nova Mesa Coccarelli, because I'm feeding them around... Well, I guess that's 10 dubia roaches a week, 5 twice a week. And they're at a stage where they're not really growing, but they're also at a stage where they're kind of too big to just have fast maintenance. It just takes a long time, and I feel like you definitely cross a line at some point where it becomes more maintenance than joy. And that's also why this year I'm going a lot more into very slow but more hardy species, or not hardy species, but more, it's just very slow species like the bullet ant, or any of the bull ants and Harpignathus venatus and trap jaws, generally a big step slower growing than, well, Halaceous niger and Campanotus nigrorensis. I'm also going to get some meat ants hopefully this year, but I think overall I don't want many big species. I want a lot of smaller species and potentially one big, just to showcase that you also have some big ants. Because personally, I definitely favor the small ants a lot more. And again, as a newbie coming into the hobby, you just want something that can grow big and fast because it's cool. But Nikos, they grow very fast in founding stage, but Lasius Niger grow very fast as well. But it the Lasius Niger just doesn't really pop until 1 or 2 years into their colony, where Nicobarensis pretty much pops straight away. But that also means that they grow insanely big, insanely quick if you don't control them. And as a young antkeeper, and when you have a colony looking to grow fast and you just want to be happy, well, you're not going to keep them down, and suddenly you hit that place where it's just a lot of maintenance. But Jake, you're keeping them at a certain size. How would you say you're doing that? How do you decide what size to keep them at?
I think you just got to be like controlling their food before they're even mature, sort of thing. So like when they're a medium colony, you're kind of set the food and they'll grow into that amount of food that you've given them. And if you keep it constant, like the population most of the time, unless they're exceptional, or like the Paludula, will kind of throttle itself to the point where it's like stable. They will reach a balance eventually, although they might overshoot it a bit at the beginning, and you might get a little bit of a die off if you you'll get a die off when they kind of hit the peak, yeah, the first time if you're unlucky, because they'll slightly go over it, and then it would like the population will dip back down, and more gently the second time it will basically hit the stable population sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's just a hard call for me, because I think I would rather have a colony I can control I can feed uncontrollably, but with them growing very slow, it's going to take a long time for me to having to deal with them. Because for me, what I like about keeping ants is watching them develop and grow. And I think, except for my Biocarinatum, that's also the thing I learned. I learned so much from keeping my Mesobarbarus. I also learned that the part of ant keeping I enjoy the most is watching them grow. Like, I have a special bond with my Novo Mesococcarellia, and although it's a colony that's not necessarily very interesting at all, I mean, there's nothing going on with them. They're just living their very boring ant life. I just have such a relationship after receiving them dying and them coming back to their very impressive size today. So I think it's a lot of the journey, and I feel like if I hit the peak of the journey, it's a time for me to kind of give the colony onwards and see what I can do with the new colony. What about you, Lynn?
Yeah, I'm just thinking a bit about this other Lacius Nitro colony that someone had that was so uncontrollably big. You might know him from online. His name is Wegmier, and he also keeps a giant fetching koi colony. What he ended up doing was taking the queen of that giant Lacius Nitro colony and some workers and completely like getting rid of the whole colony except for the queen and workers and just starting over with that colony. How insane is that?
One way of doing it, I guess.
I mean, it sounds insane, but I actually did that with my Nikos, pretty much. I mean, I saved them from mites, but that's kind of what happened. But the thing is, I never really reconnected with the Nikos because I had seen them massive and they were lovely. I loved that wooden nest they were living in. But when the mites came and I had to restart everything, they went back to just a queen and like 10, 15 workers. And I grew them from that up to like 200 workers or something. And after 200 workers, I just lost my connection with them. It's just kind of, okay, here we go again. Now it's just grow them. Like I refounded them, they survived, and they also kind of stopped at this. I think it's very clear for many ant keepers that if you lick neck the ants, they will most likely hit a pause in their life. Like every time I get some ants every time I have some colonies that's just not really interesting for me, even though I feed them and take care of them, that's always the colonies that seem to be hurt the most. Like that's the colonies that seem to die from strange regions, and it is probably down to the fact that I don't read into them as much. So I just feed them, clean them, put them on the shelf. 2 days later, feed them, clean them, put them on the shelf, and the very easy species will of course just grow. But if it's a little bit of a harder species, that's where they sometimes just have weird death. And I can't say it's my fault, but I also can't say it's not my fault, because maybe there's been some signs. But I was meant to put this in a little bit earlier, but of course we also had some. I asked a question to the viewers over on the AntPod Instagram what they thought. Lynn, I don't know what to say about you, Lynn. Lynn just says she's just eating the ants to keep control of them.
eat them before they eat you. That's my catchphrase.
Not a bad idea, especially not with those meat ants.
Oh my god. They would probably taste so nasty. Ugh.
But looking through the comments, Oregon Ants Shop says, I release them, which is also something we've discussed a little bit today. I think releasing ants is very common worldwide. But I also think it's if it's possible to give them away or sell them, it's the better choice. But yeah, official crazy antics says reduce protein for a sustained period, which is also something we've discussed. And for most species, I think it's something you can definitely try out. Slowly dial down, and if they respond by not going crazy, you can dial even further down. If they go crazy, well, then you may have to take some bigger interventions to go in and control them. Stan says population control with a little bit of an evil face. Same with Lynn's comment. That was also an evil face after. And Ant Bear's all cult saying deal with it. Lol. Or dealing with it now. Oh wait, hang on, he's dealing with it now. Oh, I read that comment wrong. Oh, so Antfei is dealing with this. Well, then this podcast is relevant for Antfei. And finally, I felt Aesthetic Ants is ending with a very good comment here, because Aesthetic Ants says give it to a fellow Antkeeper or send it to a store. And I think that's what Lynn did to the colony that's now on display. I think you were referring to Aesthetic Ants, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, that's correct.
Exactly. And that is very... It's a very good idea. If you have a physical store, it's mostly down to the physical stores that will do this. If it's a private seller, they'll probably not take a big colony in, unless they will do the brood hosting, taking brood from the colony, which is 50-50 if it's a good idea or not. I mean you get rid of them.
My bank, that's the only thing.
Yeah, I mean, you get money for them. Other colonies get help with getting brood boosted, but the colony you lose is the colony that's probably getting the most bad out of all of this. But yeah, I think that if you have a physical store, like in the UK, there's a few physical stores, and if you have a big colony, they'd probably love to take care of them, because big colonies are lovely to display. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love showcasing my new Mesococcarelli to other people, because you can actually get an insight to the ants. And because they're big, it's a lot cooler. But I tend to like the smaller things with the smaller colonies, and that's what I care about, and not necessarily the normal, oh, they have eggs and larvae, which is easy to see with the bigger colonies because there's a lot of it and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a very good idea from Aesthetic Ants to just give it to a fellow antkeeper or send it to a store. And yeah, with that, I think we've pretty much covered the topic.
I swear we've missed the main, I don't know, what was his question again? Was it... Like, from, how do you tip them,
Johnny,
or something? Yeah.
How about a show where you can talk about rehoming a colony? I guess we haven't talked too much about rehoming. Well, we have.
Oh, yeah.
Rehoming.
Well, I guess I was just going to say, like, if you do want to send ants in the post as well, just like most nests, they're actually quite good for just sending, I don't know, most of the time, ants, if you send them in the post, as long as the weather's not too hot or cold, they'll do fine as well.
Yeah.
Personally, I've just taken the whole nest, properly kind of bunged up the end, if you get what I mean, really securely, and just sent it off in the post.
Yeah, and I think that's something you can do. It's a little bit harder with an outworld, and you may just have to say, okay, the ants in the outworld, they're going to stay.
Yeah, rest in peace.
They're going to live out their life, fast or slow. And then the colony with the queen and the brood is the part that's shipping. Because outworlds, well, except for the very few outworlds that are sent pre-built, like the Heights of Gans outworlds, many outworlds are... I don't know who... Do you guys know anyone else who sends pre-assembled?
Antantics have got some pre-assembled now, yeah.
They're not that big, are they? Like, it just doesn't matter.
No, only about 15, maybe, centimeters square or cubed.
Yeah. Either way, their outworlds are fragile in general, and if you put a big outworld in a big package and someone decides to step on it, well, a nest should be fine, but an outworld will certainly not be fine. And yeah, then you have an interesting issue with the package, with the ants coming out of the outworld. But yeah, I mean, I think we've pretty much covered the... you can no longer care for them. It's recommended to sell them or give them away. And if you can't take care of them, well, if you can't give them the proper care, well, if you can't protein control them, you're going to have some issues. With that, I think that's been it for this episode. So, Jake, have you ever thought about giving up a colony? Well, I guess you have, because you've talked a little bit about releasing them.
Yeah, it's like kind of before my current Mesobarbarus pair, I had another like two Mesobarbarus pairs, and as the colonies grew bigger and bigger, I kind of gave one away. I think it was the first Ankhon. And then not long after, like somebody was like asking about kind of more colonies or something. And oh no, she'd lost one of her colonies. So I was like, do you want this big colony here? Like they're all ready to go. So I like gave the other messes away as well. Yeah. And that went really well. Like they all survived well, and yeah, now they got new homes.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can get some happy stories, like this Danish guy who's getting my Bicaran atom. It seems like it's the next step for getting a little bit more of a specialist colony, and it's an inconvenience for me, and it seems to be a big joy for him. So sometimes you can get a grateful joy by giving the colonies onwards. So what would your final thoughts be, Jake, regarding today's topic?
Definitely gift them on, and kind of just think to yourself, like, wow, these ants are going to go and live like an excellent new life, and kind of everything that's amazing when you are watching them grow and looking after them. And eventually you take it for granted, and it becomes like the same, but that person is going to feel like how you felt right at the beginning when you got like the ants, pretty much. Like they get to create more joy in the world.
Exactly. I mean, it's very well said words. What about you, Lynn? I guess we have gone over this, but have you ever thought about giving up a colony? We know you have, because you've done it. So, Lynn, what would your final thoughts be about today's topic?
Yeah, when you're trying to get rid of a colony because it's just becoming all too much to take care of them and there's no longer joy or whatever, it might seem easy to sell them for money, but it's not always worth it, because you might just not get the money, or people won't buy it for the money or whatever. So don't be afraid to just find a good ant keeper that really wants the species and just give the colony to them. As weird as it may sound, you will make someone very happy with the actual ants.
Yeah, once again, very well thought out words. That's the same principle I went with for my colonies when I gave them away. I want a little bit of money perhaps for the setup if it's a bit big setup, but the colony itself, that's not the one I want money from, but it's more the investment in if you have a big setup. I think for my final words, I would say pretty much the same thing. Think twice before releasing a colony. Maybe just keep them a week, put it online to see if there's someone who wants them, and there will probably be someone interested in getting them. And again, if there's no one out there who wants them, try to reach out to a store. And if there's still no one who wants your ants, well, then I can't say what to do about it after that. So a little bit of small information here towards the end. Casey, aka CT, ants will most likely not be a regular part of the host crew anymore. The time zones are a little bit hard to work around with. So the ant pod will most likely from now on just be Jake, Lynn, and me. So I hope you enjoy that. I personally think we have a nice little team here, a little team of three, and the more we record and the more we get back into talking, hopefully the more back and forth the conversation will be and less dependent on the overall topics, which I personally would like to see a little bit more of, but it just can't come without naturally having to talk a lot. Due to a new uploading system on the YouTube video or on the YouTube channel, all the ant pods have actually been taken down on YouTube, on the extra channel, on the Hand Holder extra channel, and have been re-uploaded as pictures, which was initially also done, but it's now all easy to find on YouTube. It's all in one massive playlist, and it's all very easy to see. But from now on, and also all the past podcasts will be with videos. Not that it matters too much, because it's a podcast either way. But this also means that if you are a user of YouTube Music, the Ant Podcast will also now be available to be heard in the music, YouTube Music app. So it's a little bit of a bonus. I want to say thank you for listening in. I also want to say that we will soon be doing an interview with Ants HQ, the store based in the UK. So if you have any questions for how a store can both sell ants, sell products, be around inverse shows, and also be active making videos online, be sure to send them to the AntPod Instagram or down in the comments of the video. And hopefully we'll get Ants HQ on the podcast in 2 weeks' time-ish, and we'll hear all your questions answered. With that, I want to say thank you for listening in. The AntPod releases new episodes every Wednesday. If there's a topic you want to hear more about, send a message to the AntPod Instagram. And with that, you'll hear more from us at the AntPod next week.